Live from Montreal from CJLO, the Jello radio station, where electric ladies get down with the acid and the Kool-Aid and cover themselves in lovely, lovely Jello.
Hello, you're listening to CJLO News. Montreal's municipal election is coming up on November 2nd. While issues of housing and active transportation are front of mind, local environmentalist groups are disappointed to see climate justice slipping from the focus during the election campaign. Climate Justice Montreal, an environmental and social justice activist group in the city, say more discussions about municipal issues should lead back or connect to climate issues. Here's one of their organizers, Nicolas Chavagnier.
How people are directly affected in a city like Montreal is heat waves, extreme weather events. Like just yesterday, we had a rain day and there was flooding in certain spaces of the city, which is absolutely ridiculous because it was not that big of a rain day. On an island like Montreal, often we get smog events in the summer, even in the winter. And this is due to congestion from vehicles. Transport creates about 43% of all greenhouse gas emissions. And these are all things that, you know, are affected by climate change. And for us, these are all things that are priorities because the Île de Montréal should be livable for everyone, no matter what their means are.
The parties have differing platforms and varying levels of focus on climate issues. Projet Montréal wants to see the construction of new green spaces and, quote, sponge parks in the city, which can help soak up floodwater. Both Projet and Transition have an emphasis on active transportation in their platforms, with promises to continue bike lane expansion. En somme, Montréal wants to see continued efforts to electrify Montreal's bus fleet, but does not have other specific environmental promises. Climate Justice Montreal has raised concerns over En somme's promise to incorporate artificial intelligence into city management. En somme wants to see the building permit process sped up using AI.
From a climate perspective, AI is terrible because its expansion is untethered at this point. Data centers are going up all over, including in Quebec, and are stealing water from communities because they need a lot of water to cool the systems, but also causing a lot of atmospheric pollution and noise pollution from their running.
En somme candidate Alexandre Teodorescu said in an interview with CJLO earlier this month, he believes AI will encourage more efficiency and could help increase housing stock, a priority for En somme. In the end, Climate Justice Montreal would not endorse any specific party or candidate, but had this to say to voters concerned about environmental issues.
And the reality is, whether it's En somme or Projet, if local borough mayors are able to listen and fight for the local folks, then that would be in the best interest of the local population. Obviously, Projet Montréal and Transition Montréal have the better platforms in terms of social justice, climate, and, you know, a right to the city.
For the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Adam Innes.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Tommy John Show here on CJLO 1690 AM in Montreal. Hope everyone's doing well. Man, what a week of sports we had. What a week of sports we had. We had the World Series getting underway in Toronto. But since our last show, we had the incredible heroics of Game 7, George Springer, three-run home run in the seventh inning to give the Blue Jays their first American League title in 30 years, in over 30 years, which is unbelievable. Then you had Games 1 and 2 of the World Series. Game 3 tonight from Dodger Stadium. We will get into that. We'll also get into the huge news in college football. Brian Kelly out at LSU. $54 million buyout. They are done. That was a horrendous performance by LSU against A&M at home. Fans leaving. A&M fans taking over LSU Stadium in Death Valley. Are you kidding me? Never thought I'd see that, but clearly the athletic department did not like that at all. The boosters, the alumni, had enough of Brian Kelly. He's out at LSU. We'll get into that. And now, because of Brian Kelly being out at LSU, LSU's job's open. Florida's job's open. Penn State's job's open. We assume Florida State will become open as well. And now it's going to be who's going to take these jobs. And it's not like there's amazing candidates. It's going to be you have to pay a fortune to get a Lane Kiffin, maybe to get a Dan Lanning from Oregon, a Dillingham from Arizona State. Those are the guys you're going to have to just pay an arm and a leg for. There's no coaches just sitting at home now that you would want for those jobs. Brian Kelly, I don't think, will go to Florida. James Franklin's the big mystery one because he wasn't bad at Penn State, just he could not get over the line in the big games. We assume maybe Wisconsin's job will be open as well. So there's a whole load of possibilities for this next college football hiring cycle. But if I were to pick right now, you like to think Lane Kiffin is the number one option for Florida and for LSU. Now, will he leave Ole Miss? That's the question. He's turned Ole Miss into a top five program in the country. He's a god there in Oxford, Mississippi. I don't think he'll leave as of right now, midseason. But LSU and Florida are sending these huge pitches to him, and we're going to see what happens. But I don't know where I stand on him. I think he loves Ole Miss. He loves making that program in his image. Where LSU and Florida, there are other factors. He has complete reign over in Oxford, Mississippi. So we'll get into where Lane Kiffin will possibly go, if he is going to leave Ole Miss for LSU or Florida, and we'll also talk about what went wrong for Brian Kelly down in Baton Rouge. We have to get into the NFL. Despite some games being awful, we will get into it. The big, big performance from the Packers on Sunday Night Football. A statement made by the Denver Broncos. The Colts continue to run. And is Drake May really an MVP candidate? He was sensational again yesterday against arguably the best defense in football, if not the best, a top three for sure. Myles Garrett had five damn sacks, and they still have Denzel Ward back there. They still have great players on that defense, one of the league's best, and he threw for almost 300 yards and three touchdown passes and was incredibly efficient again, and the Patriots are 6-2. So we'll get into that. And we'll also preview the Monday Nighter tonight, the Chiefs at home against the Commanders. No Jaden Daniels. Marcus Mariota will be under center for Washington. So we got a jam-packed show. We also have to talk about the Canadians. We also have to talk about the NBA season getting off on a strange note with all the gambling situations. We'll get into that later on. We'll get into Victor Wembanyama being outrageously good at basketball right now. It doesn't even make sense that you can have a guy who's 7'5", move like a point guard, and have basically a Kevin Durant-like jump shot. It's weird to see. It's very weird to see, and San Antonio, for as bad as they've been in the post-Tim Duncan era, looks like they are going to be just fine for the next 10 to 15 years with Victor Wembanyama. He looks special. So we'll get into that as well. Jam-packed schedule here on the Tommy John Show. So we'll start off talking about the Blue Jays, and what a performance it was in Game 7 just to get to the World Series. They were down and out in that game, and yes, Seattle made incredible managerial errors especially pulling Kirby when they did. Kirby was dealing, and they only gave him, what, 4 or 5 innings on last Monday in Game 7. That was a very strange situation. They go to Koo in the bullpen, and it didn't work out for them. And people saying, oh, they should have brought in Munoz, they should have done all these things. It was just not a good situation in Game 7. They didn't manage it well at all. Kirby went 4 innings, gave up 4 hits, 1 earned run, and his pitch count wasn't high at all. They take him out for Brian Wu, and then they put in Bizzardo instead of going to Munoz right away. To me, 7th inning, top of the order coming up, bases loaded. You got to put in your closer there to get out of that situation, get out of that jam. They go to Bizzardo, and he got lit up like a Christmas tree. And as a result, the Blue Jays are in the World Series. Now, if you look at it for Game 3 tonight, so quickly if you didn't see, the Blue Jays killed the Dodgers in Game 1. That 6th inning, they scored 9 runs. Grand slam for Madison Bargir. Kirk hit another home run. The bats were electric. And then Game 2, they ran into Yamamoto, who's on an all-time heater right now. That's 2 complete games in a row he has pitched. It was Game 2 against the Brewers in the NLCS. Went 9 innings on Saturday in Game 2. And now it's 1-1 going to LA. And this is a big matchup for the Blue Jays tonight. They have to get this series back to Toronto. I know that's crazy to say, because if they don't, they would have lost the series. But I think they could win 2 games at home at the end of the series. This is going to be their toughest test of the year. Can they find a way to get to this Dodger bullpen? When they do that, they're incredibly successful. Look at Game 1. They got Blake Snell out. They hit Blake Snell pretty well as well. I'm not saying they didn't, but they got to that Dodgers bullpen, which is the weak part of the team, and they had incredible success. Game 2, Yamamoto was dealing. They couldn't run up that pitch count. He stayed in the whole game, and they didn't have a chance. That is really what this series is going to come down to. If the Blue Jays can do what they've been doing all year and all postseason, which is run up pitch counts on starting pitchers, get these teams with weak bullpens to the bullpens, whether it is the Yankees, whether it is the Mariners, they got to teams' bullpens. You know, like, let's be honest. That's the game plan. That is the game plan. And if you look at the Toronto, they knocked, they locked Max Fried out in that series against the Yankees. They knocked out Kirby earlier in the series. Obviously, they knocked out Snell. They Rodon in the Yankees game in Game 3, Heel. When they are playing at their best, they are running up the pitch counts on these aces and getting to weak bullpens. And that's what they're going to have to do tonight. Bo Bichette came back. That was a big storyline as well. And to me, the really big storyline tonight is, can Max Scherzer pitch like he did in that Seattle series? And he brought a lot of juice in that game. Schneider was coming out to the bullpen, coming out to the mound, looking to go to the bullpen, and Scherzer's yelling at him, "You better not take me out of this baseball game. You better not take me out of this baseball game." And Schneider listened, and Scherzer got out of it. So I believe it's Glasnow on the mound tonight for the Dodgers, and it is Scherzer for the Blue Jays. So that should be awesome to see. And in all likelihood, we will see Shohei Ohtani in Game 4. And listen, Ohtani, last time he pitched, he was stellar. It was one of the great games in Major League Baseball history. But outside of that game, he hasn't really been the Shohei Ohtani of the regular season. Now, I know that's easy to say, you only had one good game. In that game, you pitched 6 innings, gave up no runs, strike out 10, and hit 3 home runs. It's one of the great performances in Major League Baseball history. So I take that aside, he hasn't been that good. But he hasn't. He struck out a lot in the first few games. He had that home run late in Game 1, but that game was over. To me, Ohtani's been somewhat in check through 2 games. It's been the bottom part of that lineup, whether it's Muncy or Will Smith. Guys like that have really contributed to the Dodgers. So cannot wait tonight. First pitch at 8:08. Blue Jays and Dodgers game number 3. Can't wait for that one. Quickly over to the National Football League. And I was going to save this for later, but I'm going to do it now. We have a problem in the NFL, and I feel like I've said it on this show for weeks now, but I have to say this. There is a huge problem right now with just awful teams in the NFL. Well, let's be honest. Some of these teams have been downright atrocious. You do have your Kansas Cities, your Buffaloes, your Philadelphias, your Tampa Bays, your Seattles, your Rams, the Colts. You have those teams, New England. You have teams that are good, 6-2, 7-1, 5-3. You have those teams, and they look like they're good. Detroit's another one, Green Bay. You have those teams. Outside of that, there's no middle tier in the NFL. There is the good teams, and there's not even the bad teams. There are the atrocious, an abomination, I can't even describe the word teams. And that is the Jets, and that is the Dolphins, and that is the Saints, that's the Raiders, that's the Browns, that's the Giants, the Saints, we said, Atlanta, Arizona, Washington without Daniels. There are some horrendous teams. To me, there's only two teams that are okay in the NFL. I think the Bears are okay. And I think Dallas is okay. Their defense is all-time bad, but their offense offsets it. To me, Kansas City's a legit contender. The Chargers are a contender. The Broncos are a contender. The Colts are a contender. The Steelers still after last night, they're a division leader. They're 4-3. I put them as a contender. The Patriots and Bills are contenders. Seattle's a contender. The Rams, San Francisco, Tampa, Green Bay, Detroit, Philly, contenders. Outside of that, Washington stink. The Giants stink. Minnesota stinks. The Saints stink. Atlanta stinks. Carolina stinks. I'm going to put them stink. Cardinals stink. Raiders stink. Jets stink. Dolphins stink. Browns, Ravens, Bengals stink. Without, be it no Burrow, no Lamar Jackson, but they stink without him. Tennessee is god-awful. Houston, Jacksonville. Listen to how many bad teams I just named. Now, in the AFC, you have a problem because you have to pick seven teams. So this is where the issue is going to come from. You're going to get two in the East, New England, Buffalo. You're going to get the Steelers. You're going to get the Colts in the South. And then you're going to get three from the West. You're getting Denver. You're getting the Chargers. You're getting the Chiefs. There are your seven playoff teams. Chiefs, Chargers, Broncos, Colts, Steelers, Bills, and New England. So you have eight teams for those seven spots. And that's it. So one team's going to get cut. Whether it's Buffalo, whether it's the Chargers, it doesn't matter. One of those teams is getting cut. So you have eight teams for those spots. I'm not buying Jacksonville. I'm not buying Houston. I'm not buying Tennessee. I'm not buying the Raiders. Not buying the Browns, the Ravens, the Bengals, the Jets, the Dolphins. No. And if you go to the NFC, it's a pretty much a similar situation. Eagles, Packers, Lions, Tampa, and then you have three from the West and two are going to make it. San Fran, Rams, Seattle. Though that is the rundown right now. Eagles are winning the East. That's one. Packers and or Lions. So that's you're at three. Tampa Bay would be four. Seattle would be five. Rams six. Niners seven. And it leaves you one. That's the playoff picture. And if I leave you one little area where a team could slip in, it's Chicago. I don't see Carolina. I don't see the Falcons. I don't see the Cowboys. The Commanders are always banged up. To me, those are your seven playoff teams. Philadelphia, Green Bay, Detroit. That's three. Tampa, four. And the three in the West. The NFC's done. And the AFC's pretty much done. It's just whether it's going to be two from the East in Buffalo, New England, or three from the West. Do the Chargers get in? The Broncos? The Chiefs? That's going to be the question. But Jacksonville, I don't see it. Tennessee, I don't see it. Houston, I don't see it. Bengals, Ravens, Browns, no. Jets, Dolphins, Raiders, awful. So you pretty much have your playoff teams right away. And there could be a team that just completely falls flat in the second half of the year. But to me, it's pretty much done and dusted already. And we're not even at Halloween yet. The only thing we need to know is who's going to win the AFC West, who's going to win the NFC West, who's going to win the NFC North, and that's pretty much it. And the AFC East. I hate to break to you, but that's what's going to happen. And in the playoff, it's okay, who's going to be the odd man out in the AFC? You have eight teams for seven spots in the AFC, and to me, you have your seven teams already picked in the NFC. Maybe the only thing that could ruin that is if the Bears or the Panthers get on a heater at the end of the year. But no Dallas, no Cardinals, Commanders, Giants, no. That's the quick little breakdown in the NFL. And this is how bad it is in the NFL right now. You have the Bengals losing at home to the Jets. You have the Falcons losing to the Dolphins. Not just losing to the Dolphins, getting annihilated. And I know there is no Michael Penix, but Kirk Cousins is not an awful quarterback. The Vikings looked lifeless on Thursday night. The Panthers get blown out by Buffalo. Like, there's just the Cowboys get blown out. The Browns get blown out. San Francisco, that was a surprise. Maybe the only surprise from yesterday. I was surprised the Bears are a little bit flat. I was surprised Dallas's offense was as poor as it was yesterday, considering how good they've been. But there's not many good teams. If I say genuinely great teams in the NFL, it's Kansas City, it's the Broncos, it's Buffalo, Philly, Detroit, Green Bay, Tampa, and the West teams. There's not that many good teams. And New England, I think they're good, but they were a four-win team last year, and their schedule's been putrid, so even as a Patriots fan, I think they're a very good team, but we're going to have to wait and see. They're the big wild card. They're 6-2, and Drake May's looking like the MVP of the league, but they played Tennessee, they played New Orleans, they do have that great win at Buffalo, which is kind of just validating what they've been doing recently, but if they didn't have that win, I know a boatload of people who would come out and say, oh, they've played nobody. That win at Buffalo is keeping the Patriots in the relevant conversation. But if you, there's no fraud, there's no this, they went to Buffalo Sunday night and Drake May outplayed Josh Allen. That's what's keeping the Patriots argument afloat. But outside of that, it's Tennessee, the Saints, the Browns, just a horrendous schedule. Miami, they still get to play the Jets twice. It's a horrible schedule. The Colts are for real. The Chiefs are for real. I think Denver's for real, but Bo Nix I worry about against elite defenses. And that's pretty much in the AFC. But it's wide open. It is wide open. There's no 2007 Patriots. There's no 85 Bears, 2000 Ravens. Even the Chiefs from a few years ago aren't as good. There's no dominant, oh my God, watch out for this team. Maybe it's the Indianapolis Colts, but the Daniel Jones being the quarterback keeps us from going there. But if you look at the Colts, they fit the bill of being that dominant team. We just don't trust the quarterback in big spots. And honestly, that is fair. It's fair because in big games, he did have that great playoff game against Minnesota. But Daniel Jones, when he truly needed to be great, he kind of looked weird. Awful against the Eagles in that playoff game. When he needed a big win with the Giants in the regular season, he would trip, fall, fumble, do all these things. But here's the thing. He has never had a coaching staff like this before, and Daniel Jones has never had a roster like this before. And the way he's playing right now, even reports are saying he's going to get a nice little contract here in Indianapolis. And know what Indianapolis is doing? They are learning from the mistakes of the Minnesota Vikings. The Minnesota Vikings let Sam Darnold go, let Daniel Jones go, despite them being in their facility, despite Sam Darnold throwing for 35 touchdown passes last year, to go for J.J. McCarthy. The Colts are not going to make that same mistake. They're seeing Daniel Jones be an incredibly effective quarterback in this offense, and they're going to keep him around for the next few years. But what a story for Daniel Jones. He got paid in New York, they ran him out of town, sits in Minnesota for a little bit, doesn't really play, gets another shot in Indianapolis, and he has been outstanding. And yes, Jonathan Taylor's been probably their best player. Tyler Warren looks like an all-pro tight end already. And that defense is ferocious in Indianapolis. So yes, all that is true, but we have to give Daniel Jones credit. He has been outstanding. So that's a quick go to recap. I wanted to go more in depth in the NFL, but there's nothing really to say. The Chargers look good with Joe Alt back. The Ravens, if they can just somehow work to get Lamar Jackson back and see where they are. But that Bengals season's over now. Losing to the Jets, that is inexcusable. Maybe Houston showing a pulse. But outside of that, it was just the Eagles killing the Giants, and I feel bad for Scadaboo. That's a bad injury. Green Bay taking care of business. The Broncos at home are tough to beat. New England, maybe New England looking as good as they did in the second half against a Browns defense. That's top three in the league. Maybe that's a storyline. But what, Tampa Bay, the Saints being awful, that's nothing new. I wish I had more to say in the NFL this week, but there really is nothing more to add. We'll look forward to these games this week. We got Colts at Steelers at 1 o'clock. That's a good one. To Atlanta at New England. The game I'm really looking forward to, like everyone else, 4:25, Kansas City at Buffalo. Let's see if Buffalo has fixed the issues from before the bye. They looked dominant against Carolina, 40-9, but they did lose to Atlanta, and they lost to New England. So this is a get-right game for the Bills, and usually Buffalo in the regular season take down Kansas City. It's in the playoffs where they have trouble, but in the regular season, they usually go and find a way to win against the Chiefs. They're at home, 4:25, they'll have Nance and Romo there. That's the game of the week for sure. For sure. And that's pretty much it. I'm trying to get hyped about the NFL schedule, but oh my God, Panthers, Packers, Saints, Rams, Jaguars, Raiders, Cowboys, Cardinals, Niners, Giants, Vikings, Lions, Titans, Chargers. There's no good games. Thursday, it's Ravens, Dolphins. That's atrocious. 49ers, Giants. That stinks. Titans, Chargers stinks. The Lions are going to beat the Vikings by a million. Colts, Steelers, Bears, Bengals, Broncos, Texans, Patriots, Falcons, Panthers, Packers, Saints, Rams, Jags, Raiders, Seahawks, Commanders, Cardinals. This is an awful week of games. There's no good teams. It's crazy. It's Buffalo, Kansas City is the only game. Maybe Colts, Steelers. Those are the only two games the entire day, and CBS has both of them. Those are the only games that I'm kind of getting excited about. Which game is Brady and Burkhart going to do? Lions, Vikings, I guess. They can't do the Cowboys. They're on Monday night this week against Arizona. Wow, what an awful game. What game's Brady and Burkhart going to do? Do they give Brady the week off? There's no game of the week. What are you, nuts? It's got to be Lions Vikings. And poor Tom and Burkhart, I know they're getting paid a fortune. Who cares? Tom and Burkhart are going to have to send Detroit, Michigan to see Carson Wentz throw three picks out of the 1 o'clock window. That's not going to be fun. Well, what game is he going to do? There's two good games. And two is like Colts, Steelers, all right, is okay. Chiefs, Bills, that's what everyone's going to be paying attention to. And that game might set the ratings record this week because there's nothing else to watch. The Sunday night, Seattle, Washington, okay, if Daniels plays, okay. But if he doesn't play, that's going to be a blowout. And then the Monday night game stinks. This next week of football is atrocious. And the week after it gets maybe a little bit better. Eagles, Packers, Patriots, Buccaneers, Rams, 49ers. Okay, this is a bit better. But week 8-9 in the NFL, and I'm trying to get you guys psyched and ready for sports. Make plans. If you want to be a good boyfriend or good whatever, go make plans this week before 4:25. Because none of those games get anyone going. Oh my goodness gracious, those stink. What a horrible slate for week 9. Chiefs, Bills, and that's it. Colts, Steelers, the rest is just appalling matchups. I don't know what I need to see Kansas City tonight. I think they'll get the job done against the Commanders. Ed Oliver being out is huge for Buffalo. That is a big loss if he's not there. But overall, you got to think Kansas City would be favorites just based on how poorly the Bills had played leading up to last week. But Josh Allen at home, they tend to win these regular season games. This is a big, big matchup for both teams. So I'll be glued to Chiefs and Bills. I'm going to have the red zone on throughout the day, don't get me wrong. I'm going to watch my Patriots. New England-Atlanta might be the third best game of the week, and that's saying something. Atlanta got their doors blown off by the Dolphins at home. So I'm going to watch my team. I'll have Colts and Steelers on, and then all hands on deck for Buffalo and Kansas City. But I'm interested to see Kansas City tonight. I think they play well. No Jaden Daniels. I think the spread was like 11, 12, 11.5 in that range. They should have no problem winning that football game in Kansas City and setting up a big, big matchup with the Buffalo Bills. So there you have it. That's where we stand right now in the NFL. Sorry to just burst everyone's bubble, but I mean, it's Halloween weekend. Go to some parties. Go have a good Thursday night. Who cares? What was it? Miami, Baltimore? Christ. What a brutal game. Awful. World Series will be on, though, so there, you got something to watch. But NFL-wise, this week, it's just that game. My, oh, my. We're going to take our first break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Brian Kelly being out at LSU and what to expect from the coaching carousel in college football. Is Lane Kiffin going to leave? Is Dillingham going to leave? Is that guy at Missouri, I keep forgetting his name, is he going to leave? What about the coach from Vanderbilt? There's a whole lot of options in college football with major job openings and possibly more job openings happening in the next few weeks. So we'll get into that as well. We'll also get into the Montreal Canadiens being one of the hottest teams in the NHL. I'm Tommy Lane for the Tommy John Show. Back after this word from our sponsors. Do not go away.
Crossover Comics is celebrating its 13th anniversary with a huge sale. On October 24th, 25th, and 26th, if you spend $50 before tax, you'll get to spin the Orb of Possibility, a 20-sided die, and add whatever number comes up as a discount. That means if you roll a 20, you'll be getting 20% off your purchase. Members of Crossover Comics also get an additional 10% off their purchase. So if you want to test your luck, come on down to Crossover Comics, 3560 Notre Dame Street West, on the 24th, 25th, and 26th. We'll see you there. One roll per customer per day, and some exceptions apply.
Tune in to Fukubukuro on Saturdays at 8 p.m. for your weekly grab bag of music from Japan, East Asia, and everywhere else. Only on CJLO 1690 AM.
Here on the Tommy John Show. So, big news in college football. Brian Kelly out at LSU. And we had some big results over the weekend. We had Indiana being just dominant as always now, which is crazy to say under Kurt Cignetti. 56-6, they hammered UCLA. And this is a UCLA team that beat Penn State, that beat Maryland. It was on a little bit of a roll, won three in a row, and they looked like they had no business being on the same field as Indiana. Indiana getting the win there just in dominant fashion. The other big win of the week was Vanderbilt taking down Missouri. Alabama had a bit of a scare against South Carolina. I don't know how South Carolina lost that game. They were in just complete control with, 8 minutes left? Then they let the touchdown happen, the two-point conversion, and Lenora Sellers fumbling there in the end of the game, and then that was the ball game. So those were the big storylines of the day until you had that night game in Baton Rouge, the crowd going nuts. Finally, a big matchup for LSU. At home. At night. Against Texas A&M, the number three team in the country. And to say LSU laid an egg would be an understatement. They were pathetic. They couldn't do anything right. The game was close for a little bit, but in that second half, there was absolutely no juice with the LSU Tigers. They came out flat, and A&M ran all over them. Ugh, just a pathetic, prophetic performance, and as a result, Brian Kelly out at LSU, $54 million buyout. And honestly, I like the decision. I really do. I'm sorry, he did not fit the profile of LSU one bit. One bit. He's a Northeastern guy. He's from Boston, for crying out loud. He coached at Cincinnati and Notre Dame. It was never going to work. Some coaches just don't work in the SEC. And to me, Brian Kelly is one of them. I don't know how in the world he got the job or someone thought he'd be a good fit. Okay, you turn Notre Dame around, but once you sit with the guy, meet with the guy, don't you think, oh, gee, maybe he's not the best for LSU? And it got off on the worst possible note ever. You had him going to the basketball game saying, my family, in the southern accent. Brian Kelly doesn't talk like that. He doesn't talk like that. What the hell is he trying to do? And then he's doing the weird video. The recruit players, like I said last night on my reaction video, he doing the Austin Powers hands. It was like the weirdest thing you've ever seen. He just couldn't relate to the players. And he left not Tulane, not Akron, not New Mexico, not Nevada, UNLV, Virginia. No, he left Notre Dame to take this job. And the reason why he left, he said, oh, I want to win a national championship, and they have the resources to win a national championship. And since Brian Kelly has left Notre Dame for LSU, LSU has not made a college football playoff, let alone a national championship game. Notre Dame won the Sugar Bowl, won the Orange Bowl, and made it to the national championship under Marcus Freeman. And that was the nail in the coffin, I think, for him. LSU were looking for a way out after 2 years. He had the awful, awful, awful performance against Alabama on the road that 1 year when he had Jaden Daniels, when he had Malik Nabers, when he had Brian Thomas Jr. They lost that game, the Jaden Daniels Heisman year. They had no business missing the college football playoff. Follows it up with a subpar year last year. They should have lost to South Carolina early last year. The refs bailed them out of that game. But any chance LSU had at winning a big game, they lost. Another thing with LSU, too, is they could not win a big game to start the year. They would schedule these decent teams to start the year. They prepare all summer for week one, and they would always show up flat. They lost to Florida State twice. They lost to Miller Moss in USC. And when they played in Las Vegas, they didn't play in the Coliseum. They played at a neutral site. Way more LSU fans than USC fans. And they lost to Miller Moss, who's now the quarterback of Louisville. They never, ever, ever, ever got off to a good start under Brian Kelly. Ever. And that week one win against Clemson, which put them in the top five in the country, that win's looking worse and worse because Clemson stink. I'm telling you, man, this was a horrible tenure, and it's costing now LSU $54 million. And this is the same AD who signed Jimbo Fisher to Texas A&M, and Jimbo Fisher has the largest buyout ever in college football history, $76 million. So this guy signed Kelly to LSU, Jimbo Fisher to A&M, and because of him, those schools together would be paying $130 million. $76 million to Jimbo Fisher at A&M, $54 million to Brian Kelly at LSU. That is horrible. That is a horrible, horrible track record. My goodness. Now, the main question is now, where's Brian Kelly going to go? But the real question is, who's going to take the job at LSU? Now, if you were to look at all the job openings in college football, you have obviously Florida, you have Penn State, now you have LSU, UCLA's job's open, Virginia Tech's job's open, and just think about the other heavy hitters that could come open. Auburn's job could come open. Norvell, I think, is going to be done at Florida State, even though he has a huge buyout. That should be a job that should open as well. So theoretically, you can have Auburn, LSU, Florida, Penn State, Florida State, all their jobs open in the same window. That is crazy. You know what that's going to do? That's just going to drive up the price of the elite coaches available. Lane Kiffin could cash in more now than he ever will. If you think about it, that we're heading in that direction. That's where we're headed. I heard Florida offered him 13. Ole Miss offered him 12.5 to stay. LSU's going to offer more money. How about Florida State? What if Auburn comes open again? How about Auburn? These are not just, you know, little Mickey Mouse jobs. These are the blue bloods of college football with deep pockets. They'll pay anything to get their college football program up and running again. So Lane Kiffin, to me, he says he loves Ole Miss, and Ole Miss is his program for as long as he wants it, so that's one thing. But I think he would be a perfect fit at LSU. I think he'd be a perfect fit at Florida, too. But to me, LSU and Lane Kiffin makes perfect sense. The other job that I think would be good for Lane Kiffin would be Auburn. If it opened up, I could see him at Auburn. But to me, LSU, any of the SEC jobs, I can see Lane Kiffin doing well at. Now, one of the problems that these other schools are going to have, Penn State, UCLA, the teams that are not in the SEC, is they're probably not going to get the best coaches. I assume the highest candidates, whether it be Dillingham at Arizona State, whether it be the coach at Vanderbilt, whether it be, was it Dershowitz, whatever his name is, Drinkwitz, whatever his name is at Missouri, he's probably going to take an SEC job. Missouri is going to stay in the conference. Who are they going to get? Cignetti just signed. You ain't going to get him from Indiana. Ryan Day's not leaving Ohio State. What, Dan Lanning? The only thing I can see Dan Lanning leaving for is an SEC job. And I don't think he'd leave for Auburn. I don't think he'd leave for Florida. I think Lanning would only leave for LSU. Outside of that, where are these coaches going to come from? You're going to get Kirby Smart from Georgia? I don't think Marcus Freeman's leaving Notre Dame. Is Lincoln Riley open to leaving USC? I know he wants to coach in the NFL. Would he come back to the South? Coach Florida? That's a possibility. Who's going to get these jobs? This is why Lane Kiffin is in the most perfect situation in college football history, maybe. Think about it. He's the number one guy for everyone. Number one option for Florida. Number one option for LSU. He's the number one option for if Penn State would love to have Lane Kiffin. When Auburn comes open, when Florida State comes open, they're all going to want Lane Kiffin. He could make $15 million a year, $16 million a year at this rate. And then you can have Ole Miss guarantee him a contract to stay. If he wants to stay at Ole Miss, he can really redo his contract. Lane Kiffin's in the most perfect spot ever in college football. But all this to say is LSU did this to themselves. That's what they did. It was a shocking, shocking hire at the time. They went for a big swing. And it blew up in their face. And from the get-go, it seemed like a weird marriage. The players didn't want to play for him. At the end of the day, LSU, they're all about winning national championships. Sure, you could have went 8-4, 9-3 for the rest of your damn life with Brian Kelly. But that's not what they're paying him a fortune for. So here we are, not even at Halloween, and we have three, right now, big-time college football jobs open, and it looks like two more will be on the way. Crazy stuff, man. Absolutely crazy. What I'm really interested to see is, will anyone go after a Brian Kelly? Will anyone go after a James Franklin? Will anyone go after a Billy Napier who got fired from Florida? Will anyone touch him? That's an interesting point as well. So crazy weekend in college football. We got some good games coming up at least. You know, this like, man, some of these big games. Like, I found the college football slate way better than the NFL recently. I don't think that's remotely close. The NFL stinks right now, you know, the matchups. College football, A&M LSU is a big matchup. Missouri Vanderbilt, South Carolina Alabama, Ole Miss Oklahoma. So this week we were supposed to have the big one between Penn State and Ohio State, but Penn State forgot how to play football. Then you have Georgia Florida this weekend, Oklahoma Tennessee. You have Cincinnati and Utah, Notre Dame, Boston College, Vanderbilt at Texas. A lot of people are going to pick Vanderbilt in that game. Texas were lucky to beat Mississippi State, lucky to beat Kentucky. They're still ranked. They're 5-2. So they're still very much in the hunt in the SEC, but Texas is making it very ugly at the minute. Purdue, Michigan, Georgia Tech at NC State, or at Georgia Tech on upset alert. USC at Nebraska. This is USC season. If they want any chance to make the playoff, it's got to start now at Nebraska. So there's some big, big matchups in college football this week. The big one was going to be Penn State, Ohio State, though. But Penn State, my goodness, they really fell flat. And then in 2 weeks' time, there's some better matchups as well. A&M, Missouri's big. LSU, Alabama, that would have been nice. BYU, Texas Tech. Let's give a shout-out to BYU. They are the number 10 team in the country right now, undefeated. And if you look at their schedule, they're beating some very good teams. Utah's a good team. Iowa State's a good team. West Virginia, they beat pretty good. That Arizona game was a bit crazy. But they have their bye week now, and then they're going to come back, and they have a big stretch coming up. Texas Tech, TCU, Cincinnati, UCF. If BYU get through that stretch and get to the Big 12 championship game, they're probably in the playoff. So an interesting time in college football. We're going to take our second break, and when we come back, we have to talk about the Montreal Canadiens, who are red hot right now. They should have been perfect on this road trip. They got screwed in Edmonton. The officiating was appalling in that game. This is coming from a Bruins fan. They should have won that game, but they responded well. Ivan Demidov looking like a superstar. Noah Dobson settled in nicely. And do we have a goalie controversy between Jakub Dobesh and Samuel Montembeau? We have to get into that as well. Not to mention, what the hell is going on with Buffalo? And well, there's another thing too. What the hell is going on with Matt Kinsella-Barini? Is he going to be in the MVP conversation? He's like third in points on the worst team in the league. We're going to get into the NHL next. I'm Timely for the Tommy John Show. Back after this quick word from our sponsors. Do not go away.
Prepare for the fright of your life, because this Halloween, Ballroom is taking you sinners to church.
Spooky! Godfather Silver Old Navy and Auntie Mag's Old Navy present the What the Halloween Kiki Ball. It'll be a spooktastic night of tricks, treats, and vogue, Miss Thing. Looking to satiate your ghoulish cravings? Auntie D's Kitchen will be serving up their famous patties, refreshments, and, for one night only, a special Halloween platter. And they're not the only ones who'll be serving it up, honey. With paranormal performance, fearsome fashion, and creepy creations never before seen, it'll be a night to die for. We've got Moonstar 007 and Mags Old Navy on MC duty and Father Cherry KFC on the decks. Join us on Friday, October 31st at 6 p.m. in the St. Edward Church basement at 425 Beaubien East for a Halloween you'll never forget. For more information on tickets and event details, follow the Montreal Kiki Ballroom Alliance on socials at MTL_KBA. CGLO is a proud partner / co-presenter of the What the Halloween Kiki Ball.
What the Halloween? Be spooky or get spooked.
I once had a dream that I was eating a peanut butter and tuna fish sandwich, and let me tell you something, it was delicious. So the next day, I decided to make that sandwich. And in real life, it is disgusting. It is a disgusting sandwich. And the reason I tell you this story, pick up the phone, just...
Hi, this is Dreamscapes, and we want to eat that disgusting sandwich because we're a show about dreams, and we don't think that dream sandwich is disgusting at all. So, yeah, you should be calling us to tell us about your dreams and your dream sandwiches. And if you do want to call in, the number is 514-848-7471. And we're on CJLO Mondays at 4 p.m. And we don't think your dream is weird at all. It sounds really good, actually.
Here on Tommy John Show. So the NHL is truly underway. We're a few weeks in now, and it's still a bit early to say who we like, who we don't like. Unless you're, you know, a fan of my Bruins, you don't like that. You can't like that. The Flames stink. You can sort of tell who's gonna have a long year. San Jose is probably gonna have a long year, outside of that, you don't really know who's going to be the good teams or the bad teams. Like Montreal right now is leading the way in the Atlantic. Is it their time? Is it Florida going to get healthy? We really don't know. It's a long season. It's a marathon, not a sprint. And it's really hard to tell right now. But if you're a Montreal Canadiens fan, you got to be thrilled with what you're seeing right now. You have your young core playing out of their minds. You have Suzuki playing outstanding. Caulfield has 7 goals in 10 games. Demidov, this is his actual first year. I know he played the 2 or 3 warm-up regular season games before the playoffs last year, but he's a rookie, and he's 3rd on the team in points. Lane Hudson's picking up where he left off, almost a point-per-game player. I mean, there's just a lot of good young players on this hockey team. They're 7-3. They should be 7-2-1 or 8-2. They got absolutely hosed against Edmonton the other night. And I'm a Bruins fan. I don't even root for the Canadiens. But I got to be fair. They had no business losing that hockey game, which is appalling officiating. And they ended up losing the hockey game. But overall, they're 7-3. It's a perfect start to the year for them. And if you look at their schedule coming up, they're going to have some opportunities. Seattle, I know they're playing okay. But then when they get home from that road trip, Ottawa's been struggling. Philadelphia, at New Jersey would be a tough one. But then it's the Mammoth, the Bruins stink, Columbus, Washington. it's not an impossible schedule. So, to me, Montreal is going to get off to a good start, and they're going to continue this run. But the real problem for them is this Dobesh's team or Montembeau's team? And it, all signs point to it was going to be Samuel Montembeau's team to start the year, but he's just getting no puck luck at the moment. It's crazy to say, but he's a good player, very good goalie, but if Dobesh continues to win hockey games, eventually it's going to be his net. I don't think they're going to make the sudden change now. But Montembeau, he's two and three, and his goals against is .381. His save percentage is .842. Jakub Dobesh, 5-0, a .177 goals against average, .940 save percentage. Then that matters. And yes, you know, he played Calgary and he played Buffalo and he played Vancouver. And Montembeau had to play Edmonton, and Montembeau had to play the Rangers, and Montembeau had to play the opening night against Toronto. Those are tougher matchups. I thought he played well against Chicago. I thought he played well against Seattle that one game. But yeah, I think it's too early to spark a goalie controversy. And I think goalie controversies are overrated in the regular season anyway. If you look at the Bruins 2 years ago, or 3 years ago, when they won the President's Trophy, set the record, they would just switch between Allmark and Swayman. They would just go back and forth. And I feel like maybe we'll see that in Montreal every other night, them just playing a game. Not just having one goalie play the majority 62 games. The other guy only playing 20. I could see them playing 40 apiece, 41 apiece. Nothing crazy. And then decide then. But Montreal, they're going to be a predicament in a few years. They have this Fowler kid down in Laval who went to Boston College. He's supposed to be the future for the Canadiens. Now you have Dobesh, Montembeau. It's a good problem to have. You'd rather have, I know the saying is, what if you have three goalies, you have none. But in this scenario for Montreal, you have three capable goaltenders. And Montembeau's going to break out of it. I've seen it too many times before. He's a very good goaltender. To me, he's just going through a rough spot. And it's so early in the year, we can't freak out about anything yet. We can't read too much in anything. If you're my Bruins, you can freak out. If you're Calgary, you can freak out. If you're San Jose, you knew where you'd be this year. But if we quickly look around the league, the Montreal has been a pleasant surprise. New Jersey's been the hottest team in the league. They are 8-1 right now in 9 games. Outstanding. Pittsburgh's been a pleasant surprise. They are 6-2-1. The Utah Mammoth lead the way in the Western Conference, 8-2 right now. Colorado's been off to a good start. Winnipeg's continued its winning ways from last year. Vegas has looked good. Seattle's looked good. And if you look at the leading scorers in the league, it's Schmaltz. Nick Schmaltz from Utah. Jack Eichel as well. Macklin Celebrini, which is a great story. Him in San Jose with not much around him. Will Smith's okay. Tyler Toffoli's okay. But it's not much around him. And he is the third leading scorer in the NHL. And he's only 19 years of age. But it's great to see him playing well. Connor Bedard's playing very well as well. I know they lost last night, but he scored again. He's playing well. William Nylander's having a good year. Evgeny Malkin leads the league in assists, which is fun to see, with 12. So it's really early to tell who's going to be the dominant team, but I think at the end of the day, if your Floridas get in, if your Tampas get in, those are the teams you have to worry about. If, you know, Vegas is going to make it. But you look at Edmonton, in the last few years, they've got off to poor starts and they ended up making the Stanley Cup final. So you don't want to peak too soon. You just want to play consistent throughout the year. And if you're a Montreal Canadiens fan, you got to be thrilled with the first 10 games of the year. 7-3 leading the Atlantic. You really couldn't ask for much more. That's going to do it for this week. We'll be back next Monday right here on CJLO 1690 AM. We will talk more about the NFL and that awful slate of games. We'll be mostly Chiefs-Bills talk. We'll get into college football, and we'll also discuss the World Series. What will it be by then? I'm Tom Lane for the Tommy John Show. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll speak to you all next week.